You're listening to the Hockey Podcast Network. New shows every day. Find us at thehockeypodcastnetwork.com or wherever you get your podcasts from.
Hello, you're listening to the Hockey Podcast Network. I'm Corey, aka Bayou Benders, alongside Mason Dixon, and this is Habs Nightly, your hub for Habs content. It's finals week, folks, so Mason will not be joining us. There's a chance that he might not join us the next episode, but school is super important, and if he needs to take some time off, so be it. You know, that just means that Benders is driving the bus, which can be, I'm sure, very nerve-wracking. Nerve-wracking to me. I'm sure it's as ignorant as it is for y'all. But I was able to lock in a guest. He hasn't been on in about 2 months, roughly. So I figured this was a great time to bring Michael back on of We the North. Michael, how are you, bud?
Doing well, man. Just came back from a work shift, a little exhausted. Got exams myself, but, you know, I'm coping with it, dealing with it. You know, you got to do what you got to do, right?
Absolutely. Is this your first year in college or your second?
No, it's my third. I'm 19.
Third. Okay, perfect. Yeah.
So basically, in Montreal, you have, like, this thing called Cégep. I'm sure you've heard all about it. It's basically like in between high school and university.
Yeah.
And I'm in my third year of Cégep. How do you call it? Like 15th grade.
Okay. Yeah. Kind of did the same thing. I went to what it's kind of considered down here, like a community college.
Oh yeah.
Which is like an easy way for you to, like, it's cheaper than going to college straight up. So you can get your prerequisites done in a community college go to university just for your major. So I ended up doing that. I spent way too much time there, but I can see you probably balance your schedule a little bit better now. You've done it for 3 years. Mason, on the other hand, this is his first set of finals, and I'm sure he's like a nervous fucking wreck right now. So
he's got this, man.
I know he does, but I know it's the first year. I was scared shitless, and I know he's probably dealing with the same thing.
Oh, I feel him, honestly. It's tough. It's tough for sure. But man's a smart guy. I mean, he's taking all these episodes off. He's working his ass off. You know, I'm pretty.
Oh yeah, I haven't got nothing but confidence in him.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, so in the 2 months that, you know, since the last time you on the podcast, his team really hasn't gotten any better.
Actually, I think the last time I was on the podcast was the season opener against Toronto.
Mm.
It was right before that game, so we were like 0-0, which is technically our best record this season.
Unfortunately, a lot of hopes, and it's, you know, 2 months in, and it's been tough watching some of these games. But I mean, a lot of it comes with, we have been struck with injuries this season.
We have been struck with injuries. I think, though, I think it's important to look at context, though, because if you look at them in a vacuum, then we're missing half our roster pretty much, right? But like half the guys, even like 70% of the guys that are out right now, played with the team while they were awful. And I think that needs to be taken into account. Like a guy like Josh Anderson, Brendan Gallagher, all those guys were playing and we were still like bad. One of the worst teams in the league, right? And that needs to be addressed. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
No doubt. I mean, even from last night's Tampa Bay game, getting a little ahead of us, but now there's their talk. They had Dvorak's going to be out. He's not playing. Against Chicago, he's going to go do an MRI. Hopefully it's nothing too serious, but we've pulled up Jesse Ylönen. So, I mean, we're basically just playing like Laval, like all the young kids who have a chance get to shine right now. And just unfortunately,
the thing with that is like they're playing, but are they really getting that much shine? I mean, Ducharme's playing these guys 10 minutes a night.
Mm-hmm. Good point.
Like 8-10 minutes a night. And that's not, especially when half your roster is injured and you're like second last in the league. I mean, you might as well play your young guys, right? Like this is a development here from Montreal right now. That's what it should be. And I think Ducharme is to me, maybe I sound crazy, but is he trying to lose his job? Like, because right now he's doing the best he freaking can.
Yeah, and me personally, I don't think any of the young guys are going to get a shot. Like, I'm so we've talked about it for like two episodes now. I'm so surprised at Romanov. Not that I didn't expect this from him, but the fact that he's actually getting time now, so he's had a chance to develop, show that he's capable of doing it, and he's actually getting some of the time to do it.
I've really liked Romanov this season. I can't even lie.
He's been great. He's
one of the very few bright spots on this team. Mm-hmm. Like, after last season, I wasn't really encouraged by it because he was really, and I mean really inconsistent. And in times where he looked good, he looked good, but he didn't look like wow materially, right? Like, but this season, he's managed to like put it all together, be that consistent defender we expected out of Moscow. And, you know, I think from here on out, you know, I think we should give him some more power play time, first of all.
Yes, but we mentioned that last episode.
Yeah, because I don't know why you're playing Ben fucking Chiarot on the power play, but not Romanov, who, like, I guess, you know, you're trying to raise Chiarot's value, and that's fine. But you're already playing the guy 25 minutes a night, damn near, you know, so what are you doing?
You're not really hurting anything. The power play isn't successful, so...
Yeah, like no contender is gonna put him on the power play, and the contender will trade for him. It's not gonna be like some pretender or like some lottery team.
No, I think you're absolutely right. And my point, my counter to that was to be that Chiarot's value, you know, if there's still the whispers of like a first overall to move Chiarot, I'd love to see him on the power play, but it's at the same time, it's stunting a little bit of more progress for Romanov and
I was going to bring that up. Like, it's not just Romanov, you know, you have Caulfield too, who I think a lot of his struggles are due, like a few of them are due to him. You have to blame the player at some point, but at the same time, like, how is he supposed to like gain confidence when even after a good game, he's demoted to the third line? Like in a Nashville game, he was playing on the second line with Dvorak and Toffoli. And next game he's playing with Perreault and Poehling. Like, and I've liked Poehling so far, but that's a demotion. It is.
Yeah. I'd love to get back to Poehling in a little bit. I got a question about him. But no, Caulfield is like maxing out like 10 minutes to 13 minutes a night. He's the most jumbled player since Kotkaniemi at this point. And same type of situation. How can he get any type of momentum or, you know, gain the, you know, confidence that he needs to get back? Because he's a very – when he shines, it's because I feel like he's got a bit of an ego. You know, he's got like this confidence. It's not a bad ego. It's a sportsman's ego. You know, he just wants to excel.
And he should. He's scored like a madman at every level he's been in, right? Like, and last year in the playoffs, we all saw what he did. We all saw what he was capable of.
Yep.
But, and Ducharme was playing him the right way last playoffs. Like, he was playing 16, 17 minutes a night as he should have. And this team got to the finals because of contributions like, you know, because of players like him. And one thing I'm going to say is that I am completely fine with tanking, but I'm not fine. But look, tanking to me, what's the use of tanking?
It's the gain, the, you know, the best overall player we can get.
Yeah, it's to improve your future, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so here you have your future on the team right now. You have a big part of your future on the team. Caulfield, Romanov, even Norlander. Okay, we're going to get to that. Mm-hmm. But what, like, you want to lose, but you want to lose with your young players leading, not the veterans. And I understand playing Chiarot, and Chiarot, you know, keep him on the top pair for all I care, right? Like, raise his value, you know, like, sure. But you have guys like Tyler Toffoli, for example. I mean, Josh Anderson, both have had really mediocre seasons to me. Josh Anderson's out right now, but why are you playing Jake Evans ahead of Cole Caulfield?
Yeah.
On the wing, it's not even his natural position. So there's that. Why are you playing Norlander like as a seventh defenseman, like 8 minutes a night, 10 minutes a night, and you're not even using him on the power play where he would excel and be better than literally any of our defensemen right now on the team? And why is Romanov not playing on the power play or in overtime last against Nashville? He didn't play a second of overtime.
Yeah, it's a lot of great questions, bud. The Romanov thing's a bit of a blunder. He's been playing just lights out lately. Blocking shots, yep. Hits, just all over the place. Great start passes, but I really just think, you know, like you kind of said it earlier, it's just Ducharme is playing. He's coaching like he wants to get fired, but almost as you know, they've almost just about gave it away that he's not being moved this season.
It's as if getting fired at the end of the season, which I think is like a formality at this point. I don't think there's a single chance.
You cleaned house, which is the next topic, but you've cleaned house. I don't see a president or a GM wanting to keep someone from the old way of thinking, especially if it's been so terrible compared to the previous season.
Yeah, but, it's been brutal.
Yeah, it's been tough. But to move on to that, though, since we've talked, we've also seen Mark Bergevin and finally Trevor Timmons gets let go of from the team. And obviously, I pretty much know your thoughts on that. But we were able to bring in someone like Jeff Gorton, who's really, you know, has promised a lot, you know, something that would be, you know, a futuristic outlook for this team. But more or less something most teams have been doing for a while now, which is like bringing an analytical, you know, thought process into this team. What's your thoughts on Jeff Gorton?
Okay, well, my thoughts on Jeff Gorton are this. I'm optimistic about the hire. I think, the Habs have finally stepped into the 21st century mindset when it comes to hockey, which is obviously very encouraging. I like the hiring for the simple fact that he's conducted a rebuild. And we haven't had a GM willing to do that never. When's the last time a Montreal GM rebuilt? It's been a hell of a long time. And so all I'm going to say is that having a GM, or like not a GM in this case, like a vice president or a second GM, if you will, who has that mindset, who would be willing to rebuild. He rebuilt with an okay Rangers team. This is a brutal Habs team. And I think just knowing that he'd be willing to do that is obviously very encouraging, because I think that's what this team needs right now. But also beyond that, you look at his track record. He's made, he's gotten lucky at the draft lottery, you know, getting the second and first overall picks, drafting Kako and Lafreniere. But also, you know, he signed Panarin. Obviously, he wanted to come to New York, but, you know, he got him. He chose to trade for Adam Fox, even though he knows he could have gotten him in free agency, like, just to not take any chances.
Yeah, to solidify it. It's happening. Freaking
paying off, because Adam Fox is
unreal.
A lock for a top five. I have him top three as a defenseman in the league right now.
Mm-hmm.
He traded Derek Brassard for Mika Zibanejad in the second round pick, which is highway robbery, as we all know. Like, Derek Brassard, is he even in the league right now?
I don't think. Maybe. I could check fantasy. I haven't heard that name in a while.
But Mika Zibanejad is arguably a first line center in the league right now. Like, he had the highest goals per game rate just two seasons ago in the league. And he's still like a star. Like, if not, like, he's a lock for 30 goals, 30, 35, 70 points. And you got him. And he's also a lot younger than Brassard. So I don't know. That's one of the best trades that not only in Rangers history, but like really in
modern league,
in the NHL. Like, that is a hell of a move.
Yeah. That's not a lot. That's like a couple of things that really excited me about him. I love that. You know, his first press conference, he said he's not afraid to do a rebuild. And whether that's just, the way that, you know, like our coaches and stuff like that, or team, you know, and it's going to suck. You know, I brought it up like two podcasts ago that we're going to lose a lot of key members or fan favorites, you know, guys that have been around for a little bit. But it's all for the sake of turning this team back into something worth watching. Absolutely. And I love a guy. I love a vice president or, you know, second GM that isn't afraid to admit that. And, you know, it almost feels like you kind of mentioned it, that the Canadians have never really said that they were going to rebuild. It's always been just picking up pieces, gluing them in, trying to fix something, make it work while you're here, you know.
For sure.
But this guy comes in, he's got no fear of like the legacy of that is the Montreal Canadiens, and just openly admits to, you know, to the fans, to the media that, you know, not afraid to make a rebuild. That takes a lot of courage, and it takes someone like especially that. I have a lot of exactly, you know, because it's so heated. It's such a controversial thing. We're not supposed to have these types of problems, but this guy comes in and openly admits, sees faults, and is going to try to fix it, which is what I absolutely love about him.
It's what we needed.
Yeah. We needed someone who's not afraid to, you know, like it seems like everyone that we ever hire is like buddies with the Habs. You don't want to say that he sucks as a person, you know. You're his friend. This dude's like, I don't give a fuck. Like, I think this team needs to get back on the right direction.
Yeah, absolutely they do. And I'm actually going to bring this up. That's one thing that I think separates Bergevin and Gorton, is that Bergevin, you know, his strength, according to the players, was ultimately his downfall. Mm-hmm. His, you know, him getting too attached to players, which it's great. You know, you have to be close to the players. I think that creates like a good organizational vibe, you know, and it's always good to be close to the players. But I think in terms of setting your emotions aside and just making the right move for the organization, long-term, short-term, mid-term, whether like whatever it is, right? I think that's what Gorton's here to do. And I think Carey Price has never had a better chance of being moved. Really? I don't think there's ever been a better chance, because Bergevin was way too attached to Price.
Mm-hmm.
I think we all saw it. He gets Gallagher too, actually. Gallagher's one. I never envisioned Bergevin trading Gallagher. And right. I think Gorton would. Like, Gallagher's already said that he wants to win. He doesn't want to be part of a rebuild,
mm-hmm.
which, you know,
if it's coming.
You go to rebuild routes, it's coming. Yeah. So that's something that might happen. And it's not something that would have happened under the Bergevin regime, because Bergevin never would have rebuilt.
Yeah. You're coming from a guy that cares, that seemed like he cared too much about the legacy of the team, and a guy coming in that's just like, I don't give two shits. I'm here to make a winning team. And it's going to hurt. You know, it's like ripping a Band-Aid off. It's going to fucking hurt. But, I mean, it's evident, you know, it's supposed to be for the better.
It's going to lead to great things.
So another thing about him is he's not he's not multilingual. He doesn't have.
Yeah, he's not bilingual. Yeah.
Yeah, bilingual. Thank you, Jesus. That's a Southern education, though.
No, you're good, man.
But no, you know, that's another thing that I really loved about it. It was a guy that we were finally trying someone that was the best out there instead of sticking to traditions. And you know what? I love that he attempted to speak French. He did just about as good as I would have. But his commitment to saying, you know, he's going to try, because he knows how important it is to the media, to the Francophone fans. Like, who cares?
No, he cares. Like,
that's he cares. Yeah, I misunderstood. I'm sorry. But yeah, no, he cares. He cares a lot.
Listen, personally, like, I know French, okay? But, like, let's say I was in this position. I'm an American. I don't know French. I would not give two single fucks about it. Like, really, I wouldn't. Because
Just hire a fucking interpreter.
Yeah, a translator. I wouldn't even be the spokesperson. The GM would anyway. So, you know, it's like
– Right.
It's really it's way – it's, like, completely 100% enough that he's learning a bit of French right now, you know? Mm-hmm. And I think he should be applauded for that. I hated the questions that were asked by the French media during the presser.
Like, right.
Are you going to learn French right after he says, I'm going to learn French? Like, bro, if you want him to learn French, you should learn fucking English for once. Like,
Oh, man. But yeah, you know, just little things like that. It makes you realize that, like, we've been in like the dark ages. Like, this guy cares about the important parts of the Montreal Canadiens, you know, like,
exactly.
He's honored to try to learn a language that's not his. And he's going to try his best to make everyone that needs that to feel comfortable, but he's not afraid to say that this team's shit and he'll do something about it. Like, this dude might be like the next coming to Jesus for fucking the future of the Montreal Canadiens. Like,
honestly, I hope so.
I haven't been this excited in a while.
I want to see what he does. You know, I'm not gonna speak too much on him before he actually does something, because I've seen way too many situations where I've expected a certain something based on a person's reputation, what they've done in the past, and where they've come in and been completely awful. Like, I'll actually give you a perfect example. Ducharme. Like, when Ducharme was hired, I was pretty happy. I had like pretty high hopes, because judging by his coaching past, he was really good with young players. He was he had a structure. He had a good offensive system, as well as a defensive system. And well, look what's happening right now. I'm not even joking right now. He might be the worst coach the NHL has ever seen.
I know Julian made an exit after, you know, having, what was that, Julian, a heart attack and shit? I'm not going to lie. Yeah, like, kind of like, wish we would have just held on.
Not just held, because look, I love Julian compared to Ducharme, but Julian was still a mediocre coach. Like, he was
good. Yeah. I wasn't the biggest fan of him, but I'd rather have a Julian-esque team than Ducharme.
He was a good defensive coach. Like, he was defensive-minded, and it worked. You know, like, the team usually dominated games. You know, they would outshoot the opponent. They would hold their opponents at bay most of the time. And that was Julian's strength, right? But he would also hold back the younger players. The offense would dry up really quickly at times. And I don't think he was that good of a communicator. So I think you know, if you're firing Julian, you should have hired someone better than Ducharme, obviously, in hindsight. Right.
Do you feel like it was more of a rush thing, and it maybe came as like an easy pick because of being a Francophone and stuff like that? Well, he just kind of fit the mold.
I think yes and no, because at the same time they made him interim coach at first, right? So it wasn't he wasn't officially the coach from day one, but I think they could have. I don't think the search should have stopped there, you know?
Yeah.
I think, like, after that, you know, keep him interim for like a little bit, see how he does. But, like, if the team keeps on sucking, then, you know, hire.
You hold no ties to him. Yeah.
Yeah, obviously. But, you know, then again, in hindsight, we can all obviously say that they made the finals, which, I think very little of that should be attributed to Ducharme. I think it's really the players that stepped up, like, and Carey Price. Carey Price has saved a bunch of jobs.
Yeah.
Like, it's crazy how the 1 year Carey Price is out, Bergevin and Timmins finally lose their jobs, right?
Right.
It's not a coincidence.
No, I don't think it is either.
Yeah.
Let's see. So before we get any further, got about two or three more topics to go over. But before we do that, I have a quick word from our sponsor, DraftKings. Just bear with me, my friend. Football fans, I'm sure we all love an action-packed, high-scoring NFL game. But with the latest no-brainer from DraftKings Sportsbook, an official sports betting partner of the NFL, you'll be a winner once a single point scored. New customers who bet just $1 on any team to score can win $100 in free bets. It's that simple. If Sportsbook isn't available in your state yet, you can still get in on the NFL action. Everyone can play for huge cash prizes all season long with DraftKings Daily Fantasy Sports Contest. DraftKings is giving all new customers a free shot of millions of dollars in total prizes with their first deposit. So download the DraftKings Sportsbook app now. Use promo code THPN, bet just $1 on any team to score, and win $100 in free bets if they do. You score with promo code THPN this week at DraftKings Sportsbook, an official sports betting partner of the NFL. Must be 21 or older, New Jersey, Indiana, Pennsylvania only. New customers only, a minimum $5 deposit, $1 wager required. One per customer, restrictions apply. See DraftKings.com/sportsbook for details. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. All right, Michael, we're back.
All right. Good job there, by the way.
Thank you. So one of the first things we got to see Jeff Gordon do, he picked up the kid, blanking on his Cale first Clegg. Name, Cale Clegg, which, you know, I had talked about, didn't seem like too bad of a pickup. The 23-year-old guy, he's got like, I think, five points in nine games.
I think it's low risk, high reward.
Exactly.
He's 23 years old. He used to be a top prospect, like up till very recently. Mm-hmm. And he's an offensive-minded defenseman who can quarterback a power play. Like, he has more power play points than any of our defensemen this season. So,
right.
And for that type of a salary on waivers, like,
it was a great asset to be added again.
This workout, you didn't pay any assets to get him, right? So it's,
exactly.
I think it's a smart move.
It's a very riskless shot, you know?
Yeah.
Savvy and if move. He really doesn't pan out here, you send him to Laval and he can help.
Exactly.
You know, the futures come up. But
yep.
Now, you know, his first game was against Tampa Bay the other day. He had a bad turnover that led to a goal, if I'm not mistaken. Pat Maroon one. Ugly. Pat Maroon scoring against us, well, scoring a goal period is tough on your team. A lot of people on Twitter have already they've already given up on Clay. They're saying he's never going to play again. Unfortunately, that's not the case. If they don't like him,
same people watch Sherrod play every game, and he makes five times that amount of mistakes, and they still back him up. So that's fun. But yeah, keep going.
No. For real though, Sherrod hasn't. You know, I remember two seasons ago, I was on the Sherrod train. I thought it was still a really good pick.
Yeah, I liked him in his first season here.
Yeah, last season, kind of starting to see the, you know, my glasses aren't fogged anymore. You know, seeing it.
He was egregious last season. Like, he was him and Weber, like, during the regular season.
Mm-hmm. Was tough to watch. It was very tough to watch.
Then Weber turned it up in the playoffs and carried Sherrod. Like, Sherrod was not good in the playoffs. Like, Weber was just really good.
Yeah, just elevated his game, which is what we expect from him.
Captain.
Yeah. Yeah, very. He's got to be one of the best captains to date. Not on this team, just in the league.
I'm not going to lie to you. Looking back, I was too hard on him. Like, mm-hmm. I think just in terms of what he's been able to do his entire career is, like, so impressive. I think he's right up there, like, in the conversation for, like, a top 15, maybe even top 10 defenseman of all time.
Really?
And somehow he did not win a Norris Trophy, which is mind-boggling mm-hmm. to me, because he should have won at least one. And like his prime in Nashville, like 2010 to 2014, was an unbelievable prime. One of the best primes I've ever seen for a defenseman. Like having a guy like that who can't skate, you look at historically, like most defensemen who are like some of the greatest of all time, who like, you know, they were elite skaters, right? Like mm-hmm. Paul Coffey, Bobby Orr, Raymond Bourque, but Shea Weber wasn't a good skater, but his hockey mind, like his IQ, was so fucking good that he became one of the top defensemen.
No, absolutely. You're absolutely
right. And I think
right.
that's so impressive and doesn't get talked about enough.
No, he really, like, Nashville owes a lot to that dynamic that was created. And I know that style of play is kind of leaving the city now. A lot of it was on the back of Weber. And, you know, granted, this guy takes, you know, he ends up having a lot of injuries and stuff. We're talking about the one, you know, now that's looking like it might be just, you know, the end of his career. He's just going to finish it out.
Yeah, but, it sucks.
Yeah, it does suck. But, you know, to be so critical on a guy that, you know, once you see him exit the game and you see how hard it is to play without him, it's, you know, I feel bad for really just, like you said, being a little too critical of him. Knowing what he was capable of. And I think that's what it really came down to, is you knew what he was capable of before. And it's just the progression in age, and to be a player that plays so physical, you know, it's going to wear and tear on your body a lot faster, but I'm not saying he's retiring, but had a tremendous career, you know,
amazing,
really outplayed what I expected of someone who hit that hard and was that tough on their own body to last that long.
But, he stayed in shape, man. The conditioning, the nutrition you have to go through consistently throughout the years to stay in that height, in that kind of shape, and take all those like shots to your body, those hits, like, and just stay in shape the entire time is like the way he played through the playoffs with all those injuries.
Right.
Like, I'll never forget that. That's what he stood for. He was a warrior. Like, he was, and he'll be remembered that way forever.
Mm-hmm. No, I think you're absolutely right. And you always hear like, it's one bad injury that stops you from playing, because if it's too long of an injury, you're never going to catch up to how fast the game is being played nowadays. And this guy has gone through just about 2 to 3 almost full season injuries, you know, where the next season, the game is that much more evolved and you're that much more behind because you weren't able to play. And for him to come back that many times and to still be so prevalent to our team really shows just how amazing of a player he was. But to kind of get back into topic though, finishing up the Jeff Gordon stuff, he had talked in his interview about kind of doing like a piggyback role, a second GM, like you said earlier. We had talked about it for about 2 episodes now about possible GMs futures. You got any guy out there that you're interested in? I know
there's a few guys that I'm looking at. One thing I'm going to say though is that a lot of the candidates that I have in mind or that have been brought up by the media haven't really had any GM experience, so it's really tough to gauge whether they do a good job.
Right.
That being said, the one guy I'm really eyeing here, I'm eyeing 2 guys, actually. Well, 3 guys. I really like Kent Hughes as a possibility, you know, the agent,
okay,
player agent. I like Matthew Darche and I like Martin Madden Jr.
Mm-hmm. Now, we've never even spoke about him on this episode. Well, on this podcast yet. So that was one I was not expecting coming though.
Well, one thing, so he's a player agent, obviously. He reps Patrice Bergeron.
Okay.
And I don't know much about him, like his hockey mentality, really. There's not much out there about him. I tried doing some research. But one thing I do know is that if you look at player agents that turn into GMs, you have guys like Kyle Dubas, Bill Zito, who are, to me, Bill Zito is one of the top 3 GMs in the league, maybe top 2. Might be the best, honestly. And Kyle Dubas is, I think, is very underrated. I think he's built a solid team in Toronto. His teams haven't been successful in the playoffs, but if you look at the team on paper, which is kind of his job to build, he's done a good job. Like, you can't say he hasn't. And the last guy is Kevin Adams, who hasn't done great in Buffalo, but, you know, who has?
That's a tough one.
Yeah. So I think, you know, just based off of that, I think player agents, especially with, you know, the analytics that go into being a player agent, right? Like, analytics are at the forefront of everything these days. When you're negotiating a deal for your client, you bring that up. So he probably has a very analytical mind. He's probably very hard and very thorough when it comes to contract negotiations, which is something we need. Mm-hmm. He'll probably be good with the salary cap and trading wise. You know, we have Jeff Gordon to help him, and Jeff Gordon's obviously a pretty good trader.
Yeah, absolutely, and that's one I love. It's really just working into what we've been talking about lately. You brought up, you know, the fact that the most popular candidates right now have not really had that much GM experience. And Jeff Gordon seems like the perfect guy to bring in someone that can be, you know, not just the same, you know, old heads that keep getting recycled. You can bring in someone new that can learn under Jeff Gordon. And then help have a more even split once you kind of get the reins under him. I mean, look, we gave Mark Bergevin 9 years, you know, and he didn't have anybody to really hold his hand. At least Jeff Gordon can help mold into the type of GM Jeff Gordon wants. And
for sure,
I think Dar should be a good candidate. We talk a lot about Matt Martin Jr. though, his Martin time Madden, in yeah. Mark Madden, dude, I will fuck that name up every time.
But
his time with Anaheim has been unreal. We talked about his
drafting. He's been like the guy leading their drafting there. And it's been insane for them. Mm-hmm. I think they have the most, among the most success in the league since 2010 drafting wise.
Yeah.
And you look at the resume, he's drafted some really good players in later rounds. Mm-hmm. He's always drafted well in the top 10. I mean, look at his recent pick in the top 10. Trevor Zegras, who made, by the way, that pass he made yesterday.
Unreal.
I'm not even joking when I say this. It might be the single most impressive pass I've ever seen in my life.
What's awesome is I've never seen it either. And the kid, the kid's unreal. He only does.
I've been on his bandwagon for a while,
right?
But I didn't expect him to be this good in the NHL, like this quick.
Like he's making the Anaheim games like watchable at this point. Like I just want to watch for him.
He looks like Pavel Datsyuk, and Pavel Datsyuk to me is one of the most underrated players. I have Pavel Datsyuk top 10 all time. Just to give you an idea.
Nice.
I think, you know, just in terms of his like his skill, obviously, but his two-way ability. I think he's one of the best players to ever play the game. And I'm not going to say Trevor Zegras has that kind of ceiling because we haven't seen the defense out of him. But offensively, oh my God, he has no ceiling. He can be as good as he wants to.
Right. Yeah, it's like watching like an NHL, like the game. It's awesome that you brought up Datsyuk because they showed a comparison. Apparently, you know, I've never heard of this. I've never seen anything like this. And Pavel Datsyuk tried this like two decades ago and was, you know, unsuccessful. But I love the comparison, though. He's playing
Pavel Datsyuk walks like Pat, so like Zegras could run.
Exactly. Yeah. I love it. He's been unreal. And I'd love, you know, you're looking at that. And I mean, that team's also got like Jamie Drysdale on it, you know.
They drafted McTavish like third or second overall, I think.
Mm-hmm.
Third overall. I think at the time it looked like a reach. Now it looks really good. They've got Maxime Contois, Isaac Lundstrom, Braden Tracy. They've got Troy Terry, who's been on an absolute tear this year.
Yep.
No, Anaheim's future looks really bright right now.
Yeah, and that's why that's why I've joined the Matt Martin train. You know, that's one thing
like that to Montreal. I'm all for it.
Exactly. And one thing that me and Mason had been speaking about is the people that we bring in need to have a great background in drafting. And Jeff Gorton was pretty fantastic. I think if we bring in like Matt Martin Jr., I think we have a really good shot at bringing in some high quality talent and then being able to keep them and develop them and be the futures and not just be moved around for older guys that are just filling in roles for a while, like we've been doing for a while.
I think it's important to just get someone who can compliment Gorton. So I think Gorton, one of the things that I can be critical of him is his contract negotiations. If you look at some of the deals he signed for New York, they're kind of iffy. I feel like the Trouba deal, for example, doesn't look good at all. The Kreider deal, I mean, look, I hate Chris Kreider. He's, you know, I'll admit he's a good player, but it's like 7 years, $6.5 million for a guy who you didn't even need. Like you have Lafreniere right there, you know, like as a left winger. I think that contract's going to age horribly at some point. I think Panarin, superstar right now, and I think worth the money right now, but is that really going to look good soon?
No, that's unfortunately, if that team wants to continue on the stretch that they're running right now, that trade has to be, well, that signing needs to be traded sooner or later.
Then again, he built this team, like the Rangers, and look at them right now. They're one of the best teams in the league. And that's with Chris Drury being an absolute idiot and trading and making stupid decisions during the offseason. So they could have been even better. Like they traded Pavel Buchnevich for peanuts, who Buchnevich is an excellent top six player. And I mean, like, yeah, I don't know. I just think if Jeff Gorton had been the one to oversee the operations this offseason for the Rangers, they'd be even better right now. A cup contender, actually, maybe.
I think you're right. He's been pretty terrific with them.
For sure.
I just hope that some of that, you know, whatever he brought to that team, he's able to bring it over here because we're definitely in some need of a wake-up call. And I think Jeff Gorton is just stern enough and just English-speaking enough to not take the Montrealness so serious and actually do something then that would make a normal Montreal fan, like a diehard fan, uncomfortable.
And there's a lot less pressure on him than there was on Bergevin because, you know, like if you look at it, he's never going to have to be the one to go out and speak to the media, which obviously takes out a lot of pressure in itself. But
also
he's like – he doesn't like Bergevin. He's Quebecer. You know, he grew up in Quebec. He understands like the market, right? Gordon, he's not really, he didn't grow up in that type of atmosphere. He doesn't like, he understands it, but he doesn't fully understand it, if you get what I mean. Like he doesn't.
Yeah, absolutely.
He wasn't a part of it, right? So I think that in itself is going to, you know, make him feel less pressure, you know, when he's making moves and everything.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, that's my thoughts.
Yeah, awesome. Well, Mike, man, it's been an absolute pleasure having you on again.
Yeah.
I think we tackled some great discussions so far tonight. But, man, I think it's about it. You worked an entire shift and then was nice enough to come hop on with us. But, you know, we're about to roll out. But if there's anything you want to say, promote your podcast, anything like that, the floor is yours, buddy.
I mean, listen, follow me at Caulfield Tops. I tweet some funny shit sometimes.
It's most of the time, if I'm being honest. You got a great Twitter vibe.
Yeah,
it's, follow.
If you also hate Ducharme and Ben Sherratt, I'm a good follow. Trust me. Yeah,
that's awesome, Michael. Well, man, it's been an absolute pleasure having you on.
Been a pleasure being on, man.
You know, it's always welcoming to have you on. You probably won't be the last you ever heard of him, but folks, unfortunately, this has been Habs Nightly. Want you guys to have a great weekend.
Fortunately, this has been Habs Nightly.
Fortunately. Okay. I'll change it up for you, Michael. Fortunately, this has been Habs Nightly. Thank y'all so much for listening. Please give us a follow at Habs Nightly and Bayou Benders on Twitter. I hope you guys have a great rest of your week, and we'll talk to you guys again soon.
You're listening to the Hockey Podcast Network. New shows every day. Find us at thehockeypodcastnetwork.com or wherever you get your podcasts from.